Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We're brought to you on this college baseball podcast by MLB Network, broadcasting the 2010 Major League Baseball first-year player draft on June 7th, 8th, and 9th. Our own Jim Callis will be one of the experts on the draft coverage. I'm really looking forward to it this year, Aaron, on MLB Network, and we thank MLB Network for their sponsorship of the podcast. But let's just dive right in, Aaron. We previewed the first eight regionals yesterday on the left side of the bracket, as you look at your bracket, from Arizona State's regional, the Tempe regional, all the way down to the Myrtle Beach regional, the Coastal Carolina regional. We ended with our disagreement about NC State. We will pick up today with the Austin regional. I don't think we're going to have a lot of disagreement talking about Texas's regional. The Longhorns are the number two national seed. They're number three in our rankings. They're not number one in our heart, but they're number one in a lot of hearts out in deep in the heart of Texas. And they've got the Longhorns as number one seed with Rice as the two, Lafayette as the three, Louisiana Lafayette, and Ryder as the number four. And Aaron, Rice, one of your more dangerous number two seeds, despite the fact they've had an inconsistent season, despite the fact they really haven't pitched all year. Do the Owls have it in them? They're obviously, they've played Texas a lot over the years. They're not going to necessarily be intimidated by playing the Longhorns. That's probably about as difficult as a two seed as Texas could get. Do the Owls have what it takes to, you know, push Texas and win that regional?
They can push them, and you know, I wouldn't be stunned to see them win that regional, because right now they're playing a little bit better than Texas. You got to be a little bit nervous if you're a Texas fan about that 0-3 showing in the Big 12 tournament. I mean, it's not as easy as you think to just switch the light on and off like that.
I agree.
Certainly, Cole Green's performance is a concern. I mean, I think that's 2 weeks in a row he hasn't pitched well. Did he run out of gas? Did he peak too early? He was lights out in the middle of the year. He wasn't giving up any runs at all. He had that long scoreless streak, you know.
Right.
But he's a key guy for them. I mean, if he's getting chased and giving up six runs or whatever, you know, that changes the complexion of that team quite a bit.
As good as Taylor Youngman's been all year, he has had inconsistent games. He is still, what, 6'6", 6'7"? There are times when a tall pitcher like that who's 20 years old is going to lose their release point, just have a game where they don't throw strikes.
Yeah.
That said, I would look for him to be at his best in the postseason. He was awesome in Omaha last year.
And he was good last week.
It's got to give him confidence. I mean, I think he's pretty good. Chance Ruffin has been ridiculous this year out of their bullpen.
Right.
What's the health status of the Longhorns? Brandon Lloyd's been hurt down the stretch of the year.
Yeah.
Are those guys going to be healthy? And what's the health status of Rice? Is Mike Ogilla healthy, and does that really help? How much does that help Rice's pitching, which has really been their biggest issue this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ogilla is healthy, and he's given them a real boost. He's pitched some of his best baseball, in fact, this year. I mean, he's had a 12-strikeout game, which was his career high. He's really stabilized that rotation, along with Taylor Wall and Jared Rogers. Now you've got three pretty solid guys. I mean, they're not dominant guys for the most part. I mean, Ogilla can dominate. It certainly is not Texas's pitching staff. But the way they're swinging the bats, right now they're swinging the bats the way that we thought they would coming into the year. They put up a lot of runs in that Conference USA tournament, and we thought coming into the year that this could be one of the nation's best offenses.
Yeah.
And I think now, right now, they might be. I mean, I think they're right in that discussion.
Well, they certainly have arguably the best player in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any question that if you're looking for a Division I player who can hit, You look at Anthony Rendon. He's front and center.
Yeah.
I am just seeing a story on the Austin American Statesman about Brandon Loy that he's going to play this weekend.
Yeah, that's what they expected. Yeah.
It's an important – yeah, obviously that's why they rested him in the Big 12 tournament. That's important for Texas. But to me, Texas is not going to let – when they play Rice, they're not going to let Anthony Rendon beat him. Anthony Rendon already has 62 walks and 21 strikeouts this year. They're someone else for Rice is going to have to beat them. Can Rick Hague do it? Can
Diego Seastrunk or Fuda or whoever? I mean, Soltzbaugh is an X factor. He had a big regional for them last year against against Kansas State and those guys. He's got to come up big, I think. I mean, they've got other guys who can do it, but I just think that Texas is so good. I mean, they're just, last week aside, they're the best team in the nation when it comes to run prevention. So yeah, Rice has got a really good offense. I mean, that can be suppressed by a Texas pitching staff that is
and defense
that is they're both top notch. And you know, I imagine Texas has the luxury now. They don't have to throw Youngman or another one of their aces against Ryder. I don't think they need to. I mean,
Ryder's
playing pretty well right now, but that team's not really a threat to Texas. I think you can. I don't know if they're going to throw Hobie Milner in the first game. Have they announced it yet? But
haven't seen that.
I mean, they probably could throw. Maybe they throw Cole Green in the first game, get him back on track.
That makes some sense because you obviously still have the rest. You have Workman and Youngman still to go. And
yeah.
Texas, I think you go in there thinking you're going to pitch three games, and
right.
If you have to play a fourth game, you know, you're Texas. You have the depth. Although I guess Austin Deshari, he's also
he hasn't been a factor
injured,
for
right.
them.
Well, right.
I mean, he was injured early, and then he just
hasn't really gotten back.
Right,
in the
he never really got back into it. So, but the reason I like Texas in this regional is because they can throw Youngman against Rice. I think that makes a big difference.
How about maybe we're taking this for granted that Rice will get past Louisiana Lafayette? The Raging Cajuns finished strong, although I know their last weekend of the regular season they stumbled a little bit and they didn't win that league tournament. Obviously, Florida International did in the Sun Belt. But they do have Osborne, I forget his first name.
Zach Osborne,
who, you know, my scouting report on him from other coaches in the Sun Belt, upper 80s fastball with really good life. Can throw the curve slider and change up for strikes. There's a four-pitch senior lefty.
Yep.
And, you know, can he stop Rice? Is Lafayette an upset factor here?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good sinker ball guy. He can keep the ball down. You know, it'll be important for them to play defense, certainly in that park, which it makes it easier to play defense in that park with that turf that they've got. It slows the ball down a little bit. But, you know, they've got a good shortstop, Greg Fontenot, who
good name for a Louisiana shortstop.
It certainly is. And you know, they've got some guys who can run that lineup a little bit. I mean, I like Kyle Olison, the leadoff guy. I think they're a tough little club. And I think also that I should mention that I think their turf and their field is new and is comparable to what Texas has. So maybe that gives them a little bit of an advantage. They're used to playing on that turf.
I didn't know they had the field turf.
Yeah, that could be a factor.
I wonder if anybody in the country does not have field turf. They still have the old AstroTurf, the faster turf. I wonder if that's anywhere out there, whether I know it's not in the major leagues, it's field turf.
Yeah, even the Metrodome now went to the field turf, right?
They don't even play baseball
there. Well, I mean, the Gophers, I mean, when they play.
That I don't know. That's a good question. Gophers, we'll get to them later.
Yeah.
Sleeper pick of the year. Well, I'm picking Texas for this regional.
Yeah, I am too, and I'm not 100% confident as I was maybe 2 weeks ago that Texas is going to roll through here, but I believe in the Longhorns. I mean, they've been one of the best teams all year long. Them in Virginia, I thought, in Arizona State. I'm not gonna panic now just because of one bad weekend. Augie's going to have them ready to go. That's what Augie does.
Right. I think if anybody can have this team turn it on and turn it off, it's Augie Garrido.
Yeah, and they've got a huge advantage in the bullpen over all these teams because Chance Ruffin is just a stud.
He's doggone good, and he's had a tremendous season. For what was a question mark coming into the year, has become an absolute plus for Texas.
Yeah.
Next regional in Fort Worth, and TCU is the number one seed with second seed Baylor, third seed Arizona, fourth seed Lamar. Aaron, I think TCU is a prohibitive favorite here, actually a bigger favorite in that regional than I think Texas is in its regional.
I agree with you. I think this is a cakewalk for TCU. I mean, I think Baylor could be a factor. Arizona, I don't think is a factor. They played poorly down the stretch. They've got a young team. They have some young, talented players, but their pitching after Kurt Heyer is not impressive.
That's the best way to put it. After Kurt Heyer,
yeah,
their pitching is sketchy, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Arizona as a factor here. I don't see Lamar as a factor as a four seed, although they played pretty well to win the Southland Conference tournament. Baylor, to me, does have some arms. I mean, they've played pretty well against TCU this year, I believe.
That's what stands out about Baylor. When you look at their club, what's a 330 or so team ERA, and that's with the guy who in the first half, you know, Sean Tallis and their veteran was pitching pretty well the first half of the year. He's like their worst pitcher who throws a lot. I mean, they've got Pinkard out of the bullpen, Fritch and Kemp and Logan Verrett have been. Is it Verrett or Verrett?
I don't know. Actually, I've called them both names.
Logan's been really good this year.
Yeah, he has been.
So I mean, like it's a typical Baylor team. They really do have pitching depth. They have a little bit more power maybe than the average Baylor club. So
yeah.
I like this team.
I'm sorry to interrupt, John.
That's okay. No, I think I owe you a few on that stretch. So.
I like the young guys in this lineup. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, they got rid of some of those guys in the junior class that had really underachieved that ballyhooed number one recruiting ranking class. And they brought in really a bunch of hard-nosed, scrappy freshmen like Logan Vick and Max Muncy.
Vick's had a really nice year.
He's had a really nice year as a leadoff guy with some speed at the top of the lineup. You know, Cal Towey's had a nice year in right field. I mean, they play – I like the makeup of this team a little more now. And, you know, I think you mentioned the arms. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with as far as their rotation goes, but whether they throw Tolleson in the first game or whether they throw Verrett in the first game or the second game, I mean, they're going to have at least two guys that are going to give them a chance. And Craig Fritsch seemed like he pitched pretty well in the Big 12 tournament against Oklahoma.
He's a useful veteran arm to have, and if you have to go through a loser's bracket, that's a good guy. That's a better guy to have in reserve than the untested freshman who you haven't used a whole lot during the year. Baylor has some veteran options.
And I think they wound up putting Verrett back in the bullpen, in fact, and he's really good in that role. I mean, I think that makes some sense for them. So, I mean, they could be a factor, but TCU is the best team in this regional for me, and they're just
TCU, to me, is a lot like Coastal Carolina. They're just as complete a team as are in the country.
Absolutely.
I think TCU's maybe not quite as athletic as Coastal Carolina.
But they've
Coastal
got
Carolina,
some.
They have athleticism.
Yeah.
But Coastal Carolina does not have Matt Burke.
You're
Let's
right.
Face it, they have good pitching depth. They don't have TCU's pitching depth, and they don't have TCU's ace in Matt Burke.
Yeah, I mean it's Matt Burke, but then it's Stephen Maxwell, and it's the whole thing, all the different arms they've got
Lockwood,
in the bullpen.
Right.
Tyler Lockwood is a nice long relief kind of guy that they throw
just
out there.
A veteran
there.
Extra guy who, again, if you're in the loser's bracket, that's a guy who's won some big games for you in his career.
Sure.
You're not reaching for a guy that you haven't used before. You're pitching a guy that you trust, and he might be their sixth best guy.
Yeah. Kyle Winkler, of course, who didn't mention, is
right.
Another weekend. I mean, those are three really good starters. They've got depth in the bullpen. They've got power arms and different kinds of looks. I mean, Caleb Merck has had a nice year for them. Offensively, I love the physicality, with the guys like Jason Coates, the sophomore outfielder who's got power and speed and athleticism. Matt Curry's had a big year at first base, kind of a Matt Stairs type player who's really took him a year to kind of hit his stride there, but he's really hit it in a big way. And Brian Holliday is just an outstanding player, a senior catcher.
Well, so just experience in the lineup and experience where you want it the most.
Yeah.
For them. So TCU, this is not a big glaring weakness on that team. They're,
right.
they're, I think they're both of our picks to win that regional.
Yeah.
And that would be one of the bigger upsets if they don't win that regional.
I agree.
Aaron, I think one of the most balanced regionals, one of the ones that can be most contested, is the one in Norwich, Connecticut. That is Florida State as your one seed, UConn as your two, the Ducks as your three, Oregon and Central Connecticut State, slight difference there, as your four. To me, this regional is one of the few where I could see legitimately any of the top three seeds could win the regional. If Oregon won a regional, it would not shock me. Their pitching is that good, and in George I trust. So that's my thumbnail sketch. I'm actually picking UConn to win this regional. I'm throwing my pick out there at the start. This is the first time I'm not going with a one seed to pick to win a regional. Who's the favorite on this regional? Is it Florida State, or does UConn get the favorite nod because of the host?
No, not for me. I mean, I think Florida State's the favorite. They're Florida State, Connecticut
State.
Is Connecticut.
That's right.
I mean, that matters.
It does matter.
And
it matters. If it were basketball, we would be saying UConn, being the fact that they have UConn, matters.
Yep.
It matters in baseball. Maybe matters more because you're talking about Mike Martin. Mike Martin is not at the same stage of his career. Is not at the stage of his career that's analogous to Jim Calhoun's.
Right.
Anyway.
But Florida State to me is experienced. They're physical. This is an offensive regional, and this is why Oregon sticks out to me because they're built much differently than these other three teams.
Great point.
Even Central Connecticut State is an offensive club, led by Sean Allaire, who the seniors had a great year for them.
Charlie Hickey, their coach, has done a nice job over the years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't he the coach at Providence before Providence shut its program down?
I think
down?
You're right.
I think he was. I think this guy's been to regionals. He's been to a few rodeos, and if he is the I'll look this up. You continue talking about the region. I'll look up this little factoid.
But Sean Allaire and Pat Epps are the big two for Central Connecticut State. They give them a chance to slug their way. I don't know how that Norwich ballpark plays. John, do you have any idea?
It's big.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big ballpark, and it plays as a pitcher's park in the Eastern League when it was an Eastern League park. So
maybe that favors Oregon then.
I was just about to say, I think it does. And Charlie Hickey was the coach at Providence in 1999. And where did Providence in its final season, when they won 49 games, where did they finish up? They finished at Florida State in one of the great scenes in college baseball history.
That's right.
Where the fans there really cementing their reputation as some of the best fans in college baseball. The Florida State fans traded jerseys, traded gifts with all of Providence players. There is still a section of the Section B website dedicated to Providence's 1999 team. That was one of the coolest things that happened when I was a baseball, the big college beat writer here at Baseball America. And that's really a neat subplot. It's almost a shame, in a way, that Charlie Hickey doesn't take a Central Connecticut State team down to Tallahassee for a regional when you think about it, because he that those two are intertwined in my mind. What he did at Providence, and if they shut that program down in a year and they won 49 games, that's what was a great story. But that's a neat little side bar to this regional.
Yeah.
The thing, maybe it helps Florida State, Aaron, to be in a pitcher's ballpark or a bigger yard, because I am really worried about Florida State's pitching.
Yeah.
Sean Gilmartin is now 7-7 for the year. He's already close to 5.
He's been terrible down the stretch.
He's been really bad down the stretch. Johnny Gast.
He pitched well last week.
He did throw well last week. Stuff's up and down. Scouts in Florida really don't know what to make of John Gast. You know, that's my opinion. You know, Jeff Parker did pitch well for them last week. He's another guy that, you know, they expected to rely a lot on this year. He's kind of been in and out of high leverage situations.
Yeah.
I mean, I worry about Florida State's pitching.
As you should.
What's the state of UConn's pitching right now?
Well, I worry about UConn's pitching, too. That's exactly the reason I'm not going to pick UConn. As much as you know, I love UConn. Been high on them all year. Had them in a regional in the preseason.
We're
with my
ahead
sleepers.
Of the curve on that, for sure.
But I'm a little worried because I feel like Elliot Glynn tired out a little bit. I mean, his velocity was, you know, 88 to 90 early. Now he's more in the mid-80s. He still competes. He's a real bulldog. I mean, is their ace lefty we're talking about. But, you know, his stuff isn't quite as firm, and he did miss a little bit of time. He was a little bit tender. And Scott Barnes, their flamethrowing right-hander, he's gotten hit a little bit too lately. You know, those two guys, I just wonder. They've had all those six-game weeks, and I think it took a little bit of a toll on that team's pitching staff. I'm so impressed that they won 47 games with multiple 5- and 6-day game weeks.
That has to be factored in to the level of the competition they play.
Yeah.
I mean, their level of competition in midweek is certainly lower than other teams, but they play more often because of the weather, and they're playing in 50-degree weather even in May.
And they won more road games than any team in America.
Pretty impressive season, just a great job done by that UConn program.
You know, but the reason I'm picking Florida State in this regional is because Florida State hasn't been a juggernaut this year. They've had these pitching questions all season long, but they still win. They just win, John. Their numbers offensively aren't as eye-popping as they were a year ago. You know, Stephen Cardullo
had a horrible year,
but when it mattered in the ACC tournament,
he was there.
He had a great ACC tournament.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's very encouraging. You know, Tyler Holt's had a good year, but not the stellar, you know, player of the year kind of a year that he had last year.
He sacrificed a little bit of plate discipline for more power, basically, is what he's done. I mean, he's second on the team in home runs. And, you know, he's not going to be our college player of the year unless he has an explosion the next couple weekends. But Mike McGee would be in the mix for college baseball MVP.
Very valuable.
He leads that team in home runs. I think he leads that team in RBIs. He's their closer. He's a great veteran. I mean, I think Florida's, like I said, I wanted to pick somebody who's not a one seed to win. I picked UConn because they're a home team, but I don't think they're going to have a great fan turnout and a great home field advantage by any stretch of the imagination. I'm picking the Huskies, and you're picking the Seminoles, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the bottom line to me is that this team is experienced, and they find ways to win. And you know, they had so many games this year where it seemed like they had no business winning, and they just won them because they're veteran, and they get big hits. Even if they don't put up huge offensive numbers like they did last year, they get big hits, and then they win.
Can the Ducks skill it up enough to generate enough offense to go with their pitching depth with guys like LaTempa and Tyler Anderson and Zach Thornton, who I think is 9-0, 7-0 this year.
Had a good year.
He's had a very good year. Scott McGaw out of the bullpen. They have bullpen depth. Can the Ducks skill it up enough offensively, bunting, running? They just don't have enough thunder, clearly, in the lineup. Can they skill it up enough to win? I just want to say skill it up again.
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, they're a lot better offensively than they were last year.
That's not saying much, though.
It's not saying much at all. I mean, great story. Oregon's a great story. And like you said, if this is a pitcher's park, that gives them a real fighting chance. And
UConn and Florida State are going to have to be on their game defensively to beat the Ducks.
Absolutely.
Pressure will be brought to bear by Oregon on those teams defensively, and they're going to have to make the plays.
And honestly, you know, that matchup against UConn in the first game, you know, Anderson versus Glynn, I think that's kind of a push. In a ballpark, I could see Oregon winning that first game.
All right, that's an interesting regional. Let's move on. We're going a little bit slower than we need to here on the Baseball America podcast, trying to get to the whole right side of the bracket. Aaron, the story of the Louisville regional right now is that the top seed Louisville will be without its head coach, Dan McDonald, suspended for 3 games for his actions in the Big East tournament. Does that open the door for number 2 seed Vanderbilt? Because I really don't think 3rd seed Illinois State or 4th seed St. Louis are significant factors. Great season, guys. We talked about Mark Kingston on one of our podcasts lately. Tip of the cap to Mark Kingston and the job he's done as the second-year head coach of Illinois State. But to me, this is a two-team regional, Louisville and Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
does that give Vanderbilt an advantage without Dan McDonald in the dugout for Louisville?
Not much of one. I mean, you know, Louisville has two really quality, experienced assistants with Chris Lemonis and Roger Williams, and they're going to serve, I guess, as co-head coaches this week.
Lemonis in charge of the hitting and the Moussaka being Greek American, and Roger Williams in charge of the pitching.
That's right, I think they'll be fine. I mean, you know, it's nice to have your head coach, certainly. But, I mean, this is an experienced team, too. They got a lot of older guys on this team. I don't think they're going to be rattled by not having Dan McDonald around.
Stuart Imes could also kind of help run the team. Maybe your Phil Wunderlich could help run the team.
Andrew
These guys
Clark.
Have been around for a while, it seems like.
Adam Duvall. They just have so many seniors. I've been so high on Louisville all year. They're just so physical and deep. They also have depth on the mound. I mean, their rotation underwent some turnover as the season progressed. The only constant really has been Thomas Royce, but they like what they've gotten out of the freshman Matt Cook and Justin Amlung, and I imagine those guys will be starting again this week. And you know, it helps that you've got a great bullpen. I mean, I like teams that are really strong in the bullpen, and they are with Neil Holland back there and with Tony Zick and Gabby Shaw. All these different looks that they can give you, all power arms too.
I'll tell you why I like Vanderbilt, why I'm picking Vanderbilt to win this regional. Number one, they don't have to throw Sonny Gray in that first game. Illinois State's good, but they're not one of the stronger three seeds.
Yeah, they're the weakest three seed.
They can throw Armstrong out there if they want to. They can throw a veteran like Chase Reed out there if they want to. They got
Taylor
a lot
Hill,
of options.
Maybe.
They got a lot of options. I think Taylor Hill is actually the guy there. He's like their third starter for this event if they want to. Because they're going to throw Sonny Gray against Louisville.
Yeah.
So they have options, like you said, Taylor Hill. I think they can throw Armstrong or even Reed, who's like their fourth starter swing guy. And you talk about bullpen depth, they've got it. Now, a big key for them is Russell Brewer hasn't pitched since May 15th with his elbow soreness. He leads the team with six saves. I'd feel better about picking Vanderbilt if they had him in the fold. The big issue for me is, will Vanderbilt hit enough?
Yeah.
You know, Kirk Casale just hasn't had the career they thought he'd have. Andrew Jobby, Aaron West, like, these guys are just okay. And you got Brian Harris, the hit-by-pitch machine. What has he got, 34 hit-by-pitches? He's got on-base over 500. I wonder if they have enough offense, but I'm picking Vanderbilt because of the pitching.
I have to interject that the latest report out of Tennessee is that Tim Corbin says he's going to start Sonny Gray against Illinois State.
I cannot believe that he's going to do that.
I can't really either. I mean, I think here's
my guess there. He'll start him against Illinois State, and if they have an early lead, he's going to take him out of the game, and he'll relieve on Sunday.
Yeah.
Or he can come back and pitch on Monday if he gets to a championship game on Monday.
Yeah.
They've brought Sonny Gray back on short rest. But I still think they have the pitching depth, even if they don't use Sonny Gray for Louisville.
I'm not,
Taylor Hill and Jack Armstrong are pretty useful options. Those guys are better than 90% of the guys that Louisville sees, even when they saw the rest of the weekend against when they won that series at Ole Miss. Those guys are better than Aaron Barrett and the rest of Ole Miss's rotation.
I wasn't real impressed with Jack Armstrong last week. I mean, he's just – location isn't great.
No, it's not.
The stuff is okay, but, I mean, it's not overwhelming. He was 90-92, kind of a slurvy breaking ball, changeup. I mean, it was okay.
You know, I'm not even on Jack Armstrong as much. Taylor Hill, I kind of like Taylor Hill.
Taylor Hill has had a real good year. He wasn't great in the SEC tournament either. I mean, I don't know. I just wasn't blown away by Vanderbilt last week. I mean, I think they're good, but I think Louisville's a lot better. So I'm taking Louisville.
Okay, well, I'm taking Vanderbilt. They were your Omaha sleeper in the preseason, but your in-person look at Vanderbilt. You know, Vanderbilt, against better teams, Vanderbilt really hasn't done it this year.
No.
They really just haven't. They're talented, but they haven't really done it. So it's a little bit of a leap of faith on my part. But I picked two seeds in those two regionals. So,
and the reason I'm picking against my Omaha sleeper is because Louisville didn't need to be a sleeper. Louisville was an Omaha favorite.
That's a great point. Great take. Next, the group of not so much death. The group of serious illness. Down in Los Angeles, UCLA, as your one seed, hosting a Jackie Robinson Stadium, which it sounds like needed some work to get up to regional snuff. LSU is your two seed, UC Irvine 3, Kent State 4, Aaron. We know who Ben Klafsinski's dad is picking here. He's picking Kent State. But I don't think I'm picking Kent State. I think UC Irvine is dangerous, but what's the health status of Daniel Bobona there?
Sounds like he's going to start against LSU, but I worry about a guy who hasn't pitched in several weeks going up against a red-hot offense. To me, that's a red flag. Yeah, I mean, especially the way Christian Bergman has pitched lately. He threw, I think, a complete game, maybe even a shutout in his last start. A little surprised. I mean, I know Bobona's their guy, but the fact that he hasn't pitched, that to me it's just a little bit of a surprise.
Not as big of a surprise as it would be for me if they throw Sonny Gray against Illinois State. I just don't see why you would do that.
Yeah.
But you know what? Tim Corbin knows more about these things than I do. And he's actually won a regional. But for me, this is people are talking about how strong this regional is. I still think it's a two-team regional again. Nothing against Irvine, but against better teams, Irvine has not thrived this year.
Yeah,
I think UCLA and LSU are by far the two best teams in this regional.
I think you're right, but I do think I could see Irvine winning this regional too. I mean, because they do have a ton of guys who've been there. You know, they've won regionals. A couple of these guys have been to Omaha.
Right.
I mean, this is an older team, and yeah, they haven't had a tour de force season, but there's no reason that they can't. You know, they haven't had a chance to play a lot of great competition. They did beat UCLA midweek a week or two ago. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Irvine's a non-factor in this regional, certainly, but Daniel Bobona is absolutely key.
Yeah, calling them a non-factor would be going too strong. To me, it's just not a team that I just don't feel great about their chances to go and slug it out with LSU or to pitch toe-to-toe with UCLA.
That's true. When they beat UCLA, they weren't facing Cole Bauer or Rasmussen.
I mean, Garrett Claypool
is
nice,
good.
Nice midweek starter.
Yeah.
But he's a midweek starter.
But I think that's
a
nice
relief role here.
Yeah, and well, I think that's a nice luxury if UCLA does fall to a loser's bracket that they've got a quality fourth guy. I mean, there's
Agreed.
Not a lot of fourth starters better than Garrett Claypool.
Agreed. And their bullpen depth is quite good. We've got like Eric Goodell coming on down the stretch of the season, Dan Klein, and down the back of that bullpen. I really like UCLA's pitching depth.
Yeah.
Their top six guys are all sophomores and juniors and seniors, and they've all got either really good craftiness or really good stuff.
And actually, that's the reason that I'm picking UCLA in this regional, as much as I'm tempted to take LSU, because LSU looked great last week. The underlying problem with LSU still hasn't been addressed, and that is Matty Ott.
I completely agree with
Matty
you.
Matty Ott still is not back. I mean, he's maybe making progress, but he sure didn't look great. I mean, he was very shaky in that save that it wasn't even a save he picked up, that mop-up role he came into. He secured the win. He didn't blow it, but it was close.
Right.
I mean, his stuff just isn't what it was. He doesn't get the sink he used to get. I think in late situations, UCLA, I mean, they've got a much better bullpen, and that matters a lot in the postseason. And, you know, I don't know when Renato is going to throw, but I'm still not completely sold on Austin Ross Ben Alsop was terrific
right.
in the SEC tournament, but that was his first real that was his coming out party. I mean, is he going to stack up well against Garrett Cole, for instance, or Trevor Bauer? I don't know about that.
One thing that can't be ignored here is the Palmieri factor. And there's no offense to John Savage, but Palmieri took Notre Dame to Omaha, and then he took LSU to Omaha, and then he took LSU to a national championship. Palmieri pushed the buttons last year. He seems, after scuffling with a little bit, to have pushed the buttons with this LSU team.
Yeah, I mean, how does Mason Katz become the big hero in the SEC tournament? Who's ever heard of Mason Katz?
The Katz family.
The Katz family has, and Palmieri has. And there are a couple of times I think Palmieri blanked on Mason Katz's name in the post-game press conference. I mean, he's just
awesome.
Mason Katz is in the outfield getting big hits. You've got Alex Edward at third base, who's been a real key for them down the stretch here. Once again, one of those guys, Mary, plugged in there and has helped this team take off. This is a tough regional to pick because I do think LSU's playing with a lot of confidence right now. Certainly they're experienced, they're dangerous offensively. Still not sold on them on the mound. I guess I take UCLA.
I'm taking the Bruins as well. Just to back you up, Christian Bergman, a complete game, 8-hit shutout in his last start against Long Beach State.
Yeah.
We're at the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. The Fullerton Regional, Aaron, which will be, I believe, on ESPNU. Not broadcast by Phil Nevin this year because Phil is now the AA manager in Erie, which is kind of cool. But we've got Fullerton, Stanford as your 2 seed, New Mexico as a 3, Minnesota as the 4. Minnesota is used to going out west. It seems like they make a West Coast trip every year, it seems like, under John Anderson. If not every year, every other year. They were my Omaha sleeper coming into the year. They barely barely got over 500 by winning the Big Ten tournament at the end of the year. But this is an intriguing regional because Stanford, New Mexico, and Minnesota all have some things they've done very well. They all have some pretty big hickeys as ball clubs. And Cal State Fullerton started slow, really came on strong as the year went on. Soon they're going to be playing, though, without one of their offensive igniters in Gary Brown. And I'm still not sure what Tyler Pill's status is, pitching-wise.
It sounds like he's probably going to go.
Okay. What's your take on this regional? Is Fullerton a prohibitive favorite, just a significant favorite? Where do you have them?
I think they're a favorite. I wouldn't call them prohibitive only because they've got the toughest matchup in their opener, I think, of any number one seed. They've got to face Seth Rosine and a pretty good Minnesota club. I mean, a talented Minnesota club.
We like Seth Rosine.
You
saw
know.
Him on Big Ten Network last weekend. Big body. Held his velocity for the most part.
Throws
really
strikes.
Well,
really
throws
strikes.
Yep.
With a good fastball. I mean, the key for Seth Rosine is to locate it. He'll always be in the strike zone. He's got to not be over the fat part of the strike
right.
zone.
He's going to be downhill. He's got to keep, drive the ball downhill at that plane. He was like 85 to 92 in that big, at least according to the Big Ten Network radar gun.
Interesting.
So, I mean, I was impressed. This was my first time watching him. I think he was pitching against Indiana or someone like that. So it wasn't a lineup like Fullerton. How much does Gary Brown not being there affect Fullerton's offense?
It matters. I mean, that's the other reason that I don't think Fullerton is a prohibitive favorite, because he's the best, he's had the best season for them this year. I mean, Christian Colon's had a great year, and I would still say Christian Colon is their best player.
Absolutely.
But Gary Brown's right there. I mean, those two guys are what make that team go. They've adjusted without him, and I think they're still going to win this regional because I think they get by Minnesota, and then I just think they're more experienced and more balanced than the other teams in this regional.
How about Stanford, which on the season, Stanford's OPS is 10 points higher than its opponent's OPS. For the year, Stanford has scored only 26 more runs than opponents over the course of 54 games. That's negligible. It's basically a push. And that Stanford's ace in Brett Mooneyham has walked 60 guys in 82 innings. Because this is clearly not a vintage Stanford club. I think next year, Stanford is going to be very, very dangerous.
I agree with you.
But what do you think about the Cardinal this year? Are they a threat to win a regional? They've had a long history with Cal State Fullerton, and they usually get the better of Fullerton come playoff time. Mark Marquis has a long history of doing that.
I don't think it happens for him this year, though. I mean, this team is just too inconsistent. They've really been up and down this year.
I guess that last time was the 2008 Super Regional, where Stanford went to Fullerton and won the Super Regional and went to Omaha. Or was that a regional?
Yeah, it was the Super Regional.
The Super, yeah.
Yep.
Jason Castro and company went down there. So
there's
some Stanford guys. Jake Schlander was a starting shortstop on that team as a freshman. There's some Cardinal who have experience winning big games at Goodwin Stadium. Is it Goodwin Stadium or Goodwin Field? Goodwin Field, thank you.
Yeah, Stanford's got young talent, but I don't see it on the mound. I mean, like you said, the fact that Mooneyham throws so many, walks so many guys. I mean, you tell me Fullerton's not going to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You open the door an inch for Fullerton, and they're going to burst right through.
I do like the fact that Stanford's a pretty good defensive team, athletically very talented on the infield. Schlander, Walsh, the very athletic Kenny DeKroger. That infield should be a good infield to defend a team that wants to bunt and push and put pressure on you. Stanford's
well-suited
for that.
That's true, but I don't think that their pitching staff is well-suited to defend a team like New Mexico that is going to come out swinging the bats.
That's for sure.
I see New Mexico scoring a lot of runs and winning that first game against Stanford.
I think that's a good call, actually, and New Mexico's not going to be intimidated by anybody.
No.
Ray Birmingham will not allow it. If you're intimidated, you're off the team.
That's right.
that guy is one of our favorites, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Watch for Justin Howard. He's the X factor for I mean, he's more than an X factor. He's the best hitter for New Mexico. He's had a huge year, their first baseman, and I think he could have a big regional.
I like that call. All right, we're going to move on to the other regional that's on TV and on ESPNU, and that's the Miami, the Coral Gables regional, where the U, Miami, takes on second-seeded Texas A&M, the Texas Aggies, as they like to call themselves, Florida International, and the traveling Garrett Whittles International Roadshow, and Dartmouth. The Big Green. Aaron, your Ivy League champion, is there any threat from the Ivy League champion? They've only played 43 games this year, which I think is awesome.
They're going to throw a little lefty out there, Robert Young, the first game, a senior who can spin it a little bit. Below average velocity guy, though, which means Harold Martinez and company could be feasting.
That's a great point.
I think Miami wins that first game. I think Texas A&M, however, wins the regional. That's the team that I'm excited about. I mean, I think that their arms are so good. I think their arms are a lot better than Miami's arms.
I think they really are. And that Miami, which, not that Eric Erickson was one of Miami's better arms, but he was in the weekend rotation. He has a long record of winning a lot of games, and now he's out with an elbow injury. a guy that has already had Tommy John surgery and is out with elbow soreness again.
So their rotation now, you've got you still got Chris Hernandez, who's had a solid junior year. He's still not the dominator that he was as a freshman. And then you've got a couple of seniors in Jason Santana and Carlos Gutierrez. Daniel Gutierrez. Who are just okay.
A young power arm bullpen, but it's a young bullpen.
I do like their bullpen. That's one thing I like about Miami.
University of Miami always has good bullpen.
Yeah, of course, naturally. I mean, they can do some things back there. Daniel Miranda and Taylor Wolf and
EJ
Ensenosa. I mean, they've got some good arms back there. But so does, you know, Texas A&M with John Stilson, who's... John, he's 8-1, 087.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers.
106 strikeouts, 20 walks, and 72 innings, and he's got 9 saves. I mean, it's probably a first team. Well, him or Ruffin are going to be first team All American, a closer. And he throws hard, and he's got great stuff. I mean, he's really good. Barrett Laux has had a phenomenal year. I mean, I like their chances with him on the mound. I don't know if they're going to throw him against Florida International or not. It might be about the only thing that can stop Garrett Whittles.
Yeah, I mean, 54-game hitting streak coming into the weekend. Talk a little bit about Garrett Whittles. I mean, this guy's, you know, he's listed on their questionnaire in the preseason as a pitcher.
Yeah.
And he was touching 93 in the fall for them. How did he get the everyday job, and, you know, what kind of hitter is he to have this kind of hit streak?
You know, they had some guys who didn't seize opportunities early, and you know, I know Turtle Thomas was disappointed with some of his players early on, and that's why, you know, he kind of mixed and matched and put some different guys in the lineup to see who could succeed, and that's how Whittles got a chance. And boy, has he run with it. I mean, he just has such a professional approach. He doesn't really chase pitches out of the zone and get himself out. He hits a lot of line drives. I mean, he's not a big power guy. He's only got 2 home runs, but he does hit doubles. He'll use the gaps. To me, we talked about it, though, I think yesterday in the first half of the podcast. It's so hard to block out the distractions once you get to 50 games or 40 games. I mean, everyone's constantly asking you about Robin Ventura and all this stuff. I mean, this is one of the most revered records in college baseball.
I would actually
knock on the door.
I think it's actually the most revered record in college baseball. Yeah. It's the one that everybody knows. Some people don't know Pete Incaviglia, 48 home runs. Some people don't know. Like, I was talking to someone who I think was a scout earlier this year about, wow, Incaviglia, 48 home runs. I can't even comprehend that. I mean, he's the only guy who hit 40. I said, no, 1997, 2 guys hit 40 home runs. I mean, you know, like, people just don't know that kind of thing. But everybody remembers that I talked to Robin Ventura, 58 hits. So this is, the hit streak is as good a record as there is in baseball. It's the same thing with Joe DiMaggio's streak in the big leagues. It's similar with Robin Ventura's streak in college baseball. So that's a big deal. That's why it's on TV. I'll be watching.
Sure.
And I think you'll be watching even when you're in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Texas A&M, Aaron, tell me a little bit about their second, the guy who's had just an amazing season for them and leads their team in innings pitch. Michael, is it Waka?
Waka, yeah.
Michael, as Fozzie Bear would say, Waka, Waka, Waka. This
guy's
had these numbers a leap off the page. He seems like he's a tall drink of water from Texas.
Yeah, he's a freshman who's come in and been a big factor for them. I mean, he throws strikes, keeps the ball down, and he's got some strikeouts too. I mean, he was a key for them early. They used him in kind of a relief role early, and they used him in the rotation. He's been kind of a swing guy for them, but absolutely, he's a key piece for them. And Clayton Ellert, the veteran right-hander, you know, he's Ross Stripling. I mean, they've got these guys who are just kind of solid college pitchers in there as well.
I mean, to me, coming into the year, if I expected them to go to a super regional, I thought Ross Hales would be a big part of that, and he's made 2 starts, got hurt.
Right.
So there are not many teams that can overcome basically losing your number 2 starter.
I agree with you. That's
a great
point.
And they have, and that's another example. I think A&M has the best pitching depth. I'm still picking the U. I have a hard time thinking the U is going to lose a regional at home, and I still like their bullpen. But the U is definitely vulnerable, and I think A&M as a 2 seed is a much more intelligent pick to win than, say, UConn and Vandy, who I picked.
Yeah, and one more thing, and just to finish up on Waka, because you asked, my scouting report I got on him is he's kind of 88 to 92, 4-pitch mix, you know, good tilt on the slider.
He walks one guy every 5 innings,
yeah.
And he's got almost a strikeout per inning. His ratios are outstanding. And these guys don't give up home runs.
And the other thing to finish up on this with A&M is I like their bullpen because they're kind of like South Carolina or maybe Coastal to some degree.
Some
different looks. You know, Shane Minks has dropped down to sidearm now, which gives him a different look. You know, Denny Clement's kind of a power lefty, like more of a 90-93 guy. Then you got your Jose Oriegas. He's more of a situational lefty, a four-pitch mixed guy in the mid-80s. So, I mean,
Esteban Urias,
excuse me. You know, so they've got, again, I like the bullpens that are versatile, that can mix and match. I like to feel like the game is secure when you got the lead, and it helps, you know, that they can score some runs, too. I mean, they've got their classic hard-nosed leader with Brody Green, who's had just a phenomenal senior year.
He really has.
I just think they're a pretty good team, and they're playing well right now. They just won the Big 12 tournament. I think A&M goes down there and wins that regional.
Let's wrap up the podcast here on the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt by talking about the Florida regional, the Gainesville regional, the number three national seed, the Florida Gators, with the second seed, Florida Atlantic, the third seed, the O-State Ballers, Oregon State, and Bethune-Cookman University is the fourth seed, Aaron. Bethune-Cookman has some offensive ability.
Yeah.
We know they have some regional experience. They're in every year. Oregon State, we know they have some, especially on the coaching side, great regional experience. Nobody left, I don't believe, from the 2007 team here, though. If there is, I don't recall any of those guys being around on the 07 national title team. And then Florida Atlantic, second-year head coach John McCormick, doing a great job getting them back to regionals. Pretty consistent year in the Sun Belt for that team. And that's another team that did it without one of their main pieces, and Glenn Troyanowski, who was supposed to be their closer.
You're right.
Overcome that. But they've got a guy in Gibson, their Friday starter, who's a legit Friday guy, going to be a single-digit draft pick, and can match up with anybody. Oregon State with all kinds of pitching depth and pitching options, but Florida is Florida, Aaron. I have a really hard time thinking the Gators aren't going to win this regional.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty favorable draw for Florida. I mean, Florida Atlantic has had a great year, and they deserved a number two seed, but I think they're one of the more vulnerable two seeds. And Oregon State, you know, they just don't have much offense. I mean,
they just don't. They just don't score.
And give them credit for rebounding down the stretch. I mean, I think Pat Casey and his staff did a really nice job because I thought that team was
dead in the water.
Dead.
Were they 4-11 in the conference
exactly
at one
right.
point?
Yeah, and then, you know, in talking to him, he just seems so frustrated with his club, but he's able to get them going. I mean, he's a really good coach. But, you know, the strength of Oregon State is on the mound, and I'm just not blown away by their guys. I mean, Sam Gaviglio is a key. He pitched very well last week.
That guy was a late commit.
Yep.
He was signed, sealed, and delivered, ready to go to Western Nevada Community College, one of my favorite junior college programs in the country. And, like, August got an offer for Oregon State. I mean, that's kind of amazing. And then he almost instantly, as a freshman, became their ace.
Yeah, and this year, of course, he was injured to start the year, and slowly worked his way back, and now it seems like he's peaking at the right time. I think that's huge. You know, and they've got power arms with Greg Peavy and, you know, Tanner Robles and those guys, but I mean, I just don't know if you can really count on those guys in a regional, especially against a team like Florida, a team that does all the little things right and will find ways to beat you.
Be curious to see how Florida lines up defensively this weekend. Will they go back to the experiment they used in the SEC tournament with Dent over at third, moving Austin Maddox to first base and Preston Tucker in right field? Or they go back to their conventional alignment this year, which was Maddox with his really catcher playing third base to get that big, big bat in the lineup? I don't know that either Oregon State or Florida Atlantic really could take advantage. I think if they played like Fullerton and Omaha, you'd see Dent at third.
Yeah.
But against these teams, can you probably get away with Maddox at third base?
I think he can. I mean, he's not terrible there. He can stop balls that are in front of him. He just doesn't
have the arm strength.
He has great arm strength. He just doesn't have great range to his right, and you know, maybe not to his left either. I mean, I think range is the issue. But he's really, considering he caught his whole career coming into this thing, his whole life, I mean, I think he's learned the position pretty quickly. He's been serviceable at third base.
No doubt.
I do expect to see him there. You know, and then you've got, I think, some quality outfielders in the corners that save a lot of runs for you. I mean, Jonathan Pigott made a huge catch in the SEC tournament to preserve one of those wins for Florida.
And you've got one of the better defensive center fielders in the country, Matt Dendecker. He's experienced.
Yeah.
He's got range. He's got a strong throwing arm. And a closer in Kevin Chapman, who I don't think he was great in Birmingham, if I recall.
Not the first game. The second game, I thought he was better. His velocity was up a little bit more.
He's pretty doggone good.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. And you know, the second time he pitched, he threw that good slider, too. Yeah, he's good. And, you know, we've talked about Florida tons this year. They're deep. They're great defensively. They have power.
I think they're incredibly motivated to get to Omaha this year. I feel like they choked one away last year in the Super Regional, losing to Southern Miss. They got a lot of freshmen who don't have to worry about the draft. I think Florida is as good a bet to get to Omaha as any of these teams, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. And here's the other thing that I like is they went to the SEC tournament. They didn't have anything to play for. But unlike Texas, they went 0-3. Florida went 2-2, won a couple of games, and, you know, Kevin O'Sullivan said afterwards, I feel really good about where we are right now. This is exactly, you know, I like everything I saw. I feel great about my chances going forward. It's not like South Carolina, they went 0-2.
Or Arkansas.
Well, I mean, Arkansas even had the injuries, but South Carolina was healthy and went 0-2, and Tanner didn't like what he saw at all. You could tell. You know, so if I have to pick a team that didn't win its conference tournament that I still feel good about, it's Florida.
The one question I do have about the Gators, who's your ace? Who is their ace starter? Is it Pantaleotis?
It's Alex Pantaleotis.
Or is it Hudson Randall, whose numbers are better?
I guess it's one of those staffs where they could go with any number of different guys. I think they still consider Alex Pantaleotis their ace. He's been their Friday guy pretty much all year. But Hudson Randall's really good, too. I mean, he's a ground ball guy. They've got a lot of ground ball guys on the staff, which is why it's so important that they play good defense. And
that's why you got Fontana.
Fontana.
3 years over at shortstop.
Exactly. And Josh Adams, who's a shortstop playing second base. And, you know, I'm not worried about the fact that they don't have a Taylor Youngman because I think all their guys are pretty good. And even if one of their guys gets knocked out early, they're so deep in the bullpen. They, you know, again, different looks. You know, they can go with the slider guy, Barfield. They can go with, Greg Larson is a sinker ball guy.
They've
got lefties.
They go with
lefties.
Tommy Toledo if they need to. They can go with Justin Pouby, who they drop down and has some velocity.
Nick Mirande had an encouraging – that's another very he's another X factor for Florida. Very encouraging development in the SEC tournament. Sully said that it's the best he's pitched in a while.
What about power? I mean, 37 strikeouts. That guy's a power left-handed arm. They've got options. They're the Gators. They've got options. We haven't even mentioned Brian Johnson. We talked about that team a lot this year because we think they're one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about that.
So we're both taking the Gators.
We're both taking the Gators. Are we going to pick these regional
Let's quickly pick our Omaha teams.
In the left side of the bracket, Aaron, I'm picking the Sun Devils. I'm not picking against those guys.
Sun Devils.
Auburn and Georgia Tech, those regionals, I cannot. I have a hard time picking the Yellow Jackets, but I'm picking them anyway.
Yeah, there's going to be about 800 home runs hit in that super regional
if that
happens.
Georgia Tech, Auburn, that's going to be.
Those are the two teams that are 1-2 in the nation in home runs.
Wow. I got to take the Yellow Jackets. I got to go with a team with deeper talent.
I agree, and. I mean, I like Auburn's team a lot, but I just think Georgia Tech's a little bit better.
Agreed. Virginia, and then you've got that as a Virginia and North Carolina.
Yeah, obviously I'm taking the Cavaliers there.
All right, me too. I think UVA is a very safe bet for Omaha as well. And then the other regional, the Columbia versus the Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Coastal Carolina. I think I know where you're going here.
I'm taking the Chanticleers.
I got to be honest with you. I think I'm picking the Chanticleers as well. I'm very concerned about South Carolina's offense.
Yeah.
I think the point you make about the fact that they don't have a dependable run producer in the middle of their lineup is a very telling point.
Yeah.
So I'm also going with the Chanticleers. Yeah. We didn't plan this. I hate to be agreeing with you all the time. Not really. You know what you're talking about. I'd be smart to agree with you.
We're both. It's funny. I think we both got four national seats so far. Let's see how this holds up.
Texas TCU. That's the toughest
one. The toughest one. I agree with you, and I've been saying all year long that I thought TCU was an Omaha team if they didn't have to go through Austin.
That's exactly what you said. In every chat, you said the same thing.
And here we are, they have to go through Austin, and I can't go against what I've been saying all year long, even though, I've got just a little bit of trepidation about Texas, but I believe in those guys. I got to say Texas.
I'm also picking Texas, much to my own chagrin. I'd love to see Jim Schlossnagel get to Omaha.
Yeah.
I think that TCU program has earned it, but they got to go through. Don't lose to Air Force, basically. Don't lose twice to Air Force.
Yep.
And then you have a better chance of being.
I think they would have been a national seed, not for those two Air Force losses.
That number eight national seed was wide open, Aaron. Yeah. And if they hadn't lost those two games to Air Force, that was right there for them.
Absolutely.
So I mean, like it's not wear it. You know, I'm not saying it with any malice, but it's their fate was in their hands. You got Florida State and Louisville in that next Super Regional. I've got UConn and Vandy. I would take Vandy there. I just think that sometimes in sports, and maybe I'm being a little random, when you have a program like Vanderbilt that didn't get to Omaha with David Price and Pedro Alvarez, I would really not be shocked that they got there without their best team.
I think Bill Simmons would call that the Ewing theory.
I'm not going to Ewing theory them. I'm not going to say it's the Ryan Flaherty theory or anything like that. I'm trying to think of a random Vanderbilt
Dominic
player.
Dominic De La Osa.
There you go, the De La Osa theory. But I just think that I like Vanderbilt's pitching depth is basically the main thing. But they're, you know, I as we expressed in talking about the regional, I have my doubts about them as well.
I
went against form in those two regionals on pick and Vandy. I think there are going to be two SEC teams in Omaha. I can't see only one SEC team. And right now, actually, I haven't picked any, and the Gators are to come, so I'm picking Vanderbilt.
I'm taking Louisville.
Over the Seminoles.
Yeah, Louisville's a better
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Louisville's just really offensive. I think they're one of the very best offensive teams in the country. I think they're better on the mound than Florida State.
And that Super Regional would be at Louisville because Louisville's a top eight national
team. That's right.
I think that's a big factor. So you're taking Louisville, I'm taking Vanderbilt there. But we're both taking the winner of that regional to get to Omaha. UCLA-Fullerton Super Regional. Who you got there?
Well,
making you go first on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to pick UCLA to beat Fullerton again until it happens.
I hadn't remembered that one, but me neither. I'm not picking UCLA to beat Fullerton either. That said,
the Gary Brown factor is key.
If not now, when? If not us, Trevor Bauer, Garrett Cole, who? I mean, if it doesn't happen this year for UCLA, it's kind of...
UCLA would be better next
year. Next year with all their juniors.
UCLA would be better next year.
I don't know that they'll be better in the regular season, but I would rather go in... I would rather have Cole and Bauer not worried about the draft...
That's true.
...than have them next year.
That's true.
To be completely honest with you.
But I think their offense will be better next year because they got all those young guys who will be a year older. I think they'll be more dangerous and complete in that respect.
I think I agree with you. But I have a hard time picking against UCLA in a best 2 out of 3 series with Cole and Bauer.
Yeah, and to me, the big thing is Fullerton, I think, will be able to beat Cole and Bauer because they'll be able to drive up the pitch count, foul off pitches, do all the little things, the bunts and things that will drive those guys crazy. I think that's how you beat those guys. You got to be, you know, you got to execute, and Fullerton can do that. That's what they do.
You know, I'm changing my pick. I'm picking UCLA.
Okay.
The more I think about it, I can't pick against Trevor Bauer. He's my long-toss guy in college baseball right now is Trevor Bauer. Nobody long-tosses like Trevor Bauer. No one knows the pull-downs. No one's tubing like Trevor. I got to go with Trevor Bauer.
John, you got that UCLA bias. You're going to hear it from those guys.
I guess so. I can't believe I just changed my pick. The Titans are playing as well as any team in the country right now. What do they win, 21 out of 23 at one stretch?
Something like that. They
And they just beat UCLA twice at midweek.
Will they have Gary Brown, though? I mean, that is a big question. I think they can beat UCLA without Gary Brown, but I feel a lot more comfortable with it if they had him.
I think so too, but I'm going to put my money on the power arm.
I mean, it's not like Fullerton's pitching is any slouch. Noe Ramirez is back; he's pitching well.
I love Dylan.
Dylan Floro. Daniel Rankin has recovered from his slow start. It sounds like Tyler Pill is going to be back. I mean, Fullerton's good on the mound too.
I think it's Buhawk County where him and Brett Mooneyham went to high school, but. He was the number two starter. Mooneyham was the one when he was a junior. Anyway, I think that's kind
of that is one of the most compelling super regional matchup.
Potential
super regional matchup.
I think that's the best super regional matchup by far. To be honest with you, even Texas and TCU is very compelling. I love UCLA Fullerton because you have the bigger name school with no college baseball history, and then Fullerton with all the tradition and history, and the experience of those current players who completely failed last year in the glare of Omaha. I mean, they were terrible last year in Omaha.
And of course,
ugly 0-2.
And of course, the history just with these two programs recently, where UCLA got to Super Regional and lost to Fullerton a few years back, and then was it 08?
Yeah.
Was it 08? They were in the same regional, and UCLA won the first game, and you know, against Fullerton, and then Fullerton came out of the loser's bracket and beat them twice in a row.
Who do you root for if you're a UC Irvine fan in that Super Regional? Your first ex-coach, John Savage, or your second ex-coach, Dave Serrano? There are a lot of ties here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of history here. Those two teams just don't like each other.
They sure don't.
finally, you've got it as the A&M Florida Super Regional. I have it as the Miami U of Gators Super Regional. I think we're both picking the Gators.
Yeah, the Gators. For all the reasons we just talked about, I think we're both very high on the Gators.
National championship pick, Aaron.
What do you got?
I'm picking the Cavaliers. I guess I'm an ACC homer.
ACC homer, John.
I guess I am, but I think one of the perhaps the best story for the College World Series this year would be for an Omaha boy to shut down Rosenblatt Stadium and Brian O'Connor to take home, the guy who's in this freaking statue, to take home the trophy.
That'd be awesome.
And that's, and I think UVA is a complete team. I think they're battle-tested. I'd feel a lot better about the pick if Danny Holton was at the peak of his powers right now, but I think Virginia is the real deal.
It's a great
and
pick.
Yes, Virginia, there can be a College World Series championship. I think it would also be very telling for the ACC to finally get a champion and for their champions to be Virginia and Wake Forest historically,
right.
And not their power programs.
Who do you got on the other side of the bracket?
Other side of the bracket, I've got Texas or Florida, and I would lean toward Florida right now because they seem like they're a little bit more complete, a little bit more offensive. But you can't go against Texas.
Texas is very offensive for Texas.
They have two guys in double digits on home runs.
They set the school home run record this year, which is something that people, I guess, maybe overlook because their numbers aren't as gaudy as maybe some other, Virginia, whoever else is out there.
I love the top four in our ranking. I love all those teams, Florida, Arizona State, Texas, Virginia. I think the national champion will be one of those four, but you got to pick one. I'm picking Virginia.
I've thought all year long that Texas and Virginia were the two best teams, just a hair above Arizona State and then Florida, Coastal, I mean Louisville. I like all those teams, TCU. But Texas and Virginia, to me, they were the
1 and 2.
1 and 2 in the preseason. We had to flip a coin almost to decide who to put number one.
Basically.
Number one in our rankings has been basically those teams all year long, with the exception of maybe 1 week with Arizona State.
Yeah, I think so.
Or 2 weeks. It wasn't much.
There might have been a UCLA week in there, too. I don't think so.
I don't think UCLA was number one in our poll.
I think Arizona State's the only other interloper, though. I think you're right.
It's been Texas, Virginia. I think it comes down to Texas and Virginia in the finals. I'm going to stick with my preseason pick. I'm going to take the Longhorns, but it could go either way. If it gets to that point, I mean, I'm very high on Virginia, but I'll stick with Texas.
I really don't see – I know upsets can happen. I don't see someone other than those four teams winning it. I think Arizona State, Florida, Texas, and Virginia are a good step above in terms of pitching depth, in terms of balance, athleticism. Coastal approaches it, but let's face it, they're Coastal. They're not going to win the whole thing in their first trip there. I'm sorry. They're just not. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. The O-State Ballers couldn't win it their first year. They had to get there and fail.
Fresno would be the exception. I mean, you can't say that because they were there
in
1990.
You're right. No, you're right. Fresno is the exception. I don't think lightning strikes twice. It might be neat for college baseball if a team like Coastal, another upset. They'd be much less of an upset than Fresno, but they're also much less known of a school. And I can't imagine what that would mean for the university if Coastal Carolina won the national championship. But I think those front four teams, that Fab Four, is – I think those guys are a cut above, and I expect one of those four teams to win it. For me, ranking it in my head, I would go Virginia right now, Virginia, Florida, Texas, Arizona State, just because I think Arizona State's starting pitching is a notch below.
And yet you're taking Texas over Florida on that side of the bracket.
I think I am because of Augie Garrido.
Okay.
I think I am because of August Garrido Jr. Whether or not he said gotcha to that curb or not, I think Augie Garrido gets the edge over Sully. No offense to Sully. I love Sully. I'm going to go call Sully right now. But, I think I'm going to give Texas that a little bit of an edge because of that coaching.
Interesting that I think I've got 7 national seeds in Omaha. And do you as well? You've got 6 maybe?
Yeah, I think the only one I don't have actually is Louisville. Yeah. So I have 7 as well.
You've got 7 as well. That's right. So we both like those teams because
they've earned it.
They've earned it. I mean, I just think, like we've talked about all year long, there's a gap after about 12 teams or so.
Absolutely. Hour-long podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We enjoy it. I think our passion for college baseball shows, and I hope that this might be the last podcast of the year, maybe next week. Then not the last one where we go on like this. We'll have a pre-College Series podcast.
Yeah,
but
and I'm sure we'll do pre-Super Regionals also.
You're right. What am I talking about? Well, what am I talking about? I'm getting ahead of myself. I was starting to get –
calm down, big guy.
I'm starting to wax poetic about missing the podcasts. I love the college podcasts. So. But we hope you enjoy them. Send in the emails if you have them at podcast@baseballamerica.com. And once again, I want to thank MLB Network for sponsoring the podcast. And don't forget to watch the broadcast of the draft June 7th, 8th, and 9th on MLB Network. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.